Well, first of all, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation. It's a tremendous meeting. And it's nice to be at least one representative from outside the neighborhood and, you know, could make the trip over. So embryonic stem cells have remarkable properties. They can self-renew, they can proliferate rapidly, and they can differentiate into all cell types in our bodies. So what are the molecular determinants that endow these cells with these unique properties? And we heard this morning, clearly DNA methylation, histone modifications, specific transcription factors, they all play important roles in maintaining and establishing stem cell identity. But what about other mechanisms? And the one that we're particularly interested in are microRNAs. And unlike all of the aforementioned mechanisms which regulate transcription, microRNAs regulate genes at the level post-transcriptionally. So microRNAs, as demonstrated here, are sequentially processed in the nucleus from primary RNA transcripts into their mature 22 nucleotide form. This processing involves the microprocessor complex, which cleaves these hairpin structures to release precursor microRNAs, which are then exported and further processed by DICER to release 22 nucleotide mature microRNAs, one strand of which is incorporated into what's termed the RNA-induced silencing complex, or RISC. And what RISC does is it recognizes target messenger RNAs based on sequence complementarity and leads to translational repression, or in some cases leads to endonucleolytic cleavage of the target messenger RNA. So one of the reasons we became interested in looking at the mechanisms by which microRNAs are made and how they function in embryonic stem cells was work done from several groups where genetically embryonic stem cells were depleted of all microRNAs. And this was achieved by deleting DICER or some of the other machinery that's required for the biogenesis of microRNAs. And two things were observed, two features were observed in these microRNA-deficient embryonic stem cells. One is they were unable to differentiate, and the other is they had a much slower proliferation rate. And we all know that embryonic stem cells proliferate very rapidly. They seem to bypass the normal G1S checkpoint, and so they have a much faster cell cycle than most other somatic cell types. And I wanted to point out for the purposes of this talk, there are certain microRNAs, including the LET7 family, which are highly expressed in differentiated cell types, but are absent in undifferentiated cells. And similarly, there are what's termed the embryonic stem cell-specific microRNAs. And this comprises two families, the MIR-302 and the 290, which together represent probably 70 to 80% of the total microRNA repertoire in embryonic stem cells. So we are interested in understanding the mechanisms by which microRNAs may be regulated, specifically in embryonic stem cells. And so a phenomenon being described in the literature where, as I mentioned, the LET7 microRNA are highly expressed in differentiated cells, but are depleted in undifferentiated embryonic stem cells. But this is not a transcriptional upregulation of LET7 as the cells differentiate, because if you look at the primary microRNA transcript from which this mature form is derived, you'll see that the levels are relatively constant throughout the development and throughout differentiation, suggesting that there were mechanisms in place to prevent the processing of LET7, specifically in the embryonic stem cells, and we wanted to understand the mechanism which could explain this. This is work done in collaboration with George Daly's lab and a very talented MD PhD student. So the way that we went about finding this potential mechanism, we did a lot of experiments I don't have time to talk about, but basically we had evidence that there was a factor that was present in the undifferentiated extracts that was able to specifically inhibit the processing of LET7. And so we used a biochemical approach to find this factor. We coupled synthetic LET7 RNA to agarose beads, incubated it with an embryonic whole cell extract, and found proteins that specifically bind to LET7 from the embryonic extract. And we did this using mass spec sequencing to identify the proteins that specifically bind to the precursor LET7. The protein we identified was a heterochronic gene, meaning it was implicated in developmental timing in C. elegans. It was identified in Bob Horvitz's lab when Victor Ambros was a postdoc in that lab. This protein is called LIN28. And it's a known RNA binding protein, but at the time, its function remained unclear. So So this became our number one candidate for this potential blocking factor. And so as you can see here, if you ectopically express LIN28 protein in cells that don't normally express it, you can cause the block in LET7 processing, as shown here and shown here. So this is a northern blot looking at the mature LET7 microRNAs. And LET7 is a family, and we showed that multiple family members were inhibited by the expression of LIN28. Now, there seemed to be a selective inhibition, because if you looked at the levels of non-LET7 family members, it seemed to be relatively unaffected by LIN28 levels. Conversely, if we deplete LIN28 from embryonic cells, which normally express LIN28, you can see a relief of this processing inhibition. And so, as shown here by qPCR, you see an accumulation of multiple LET7 family members when you deplete cells of LIN28, whereas other non-LET7 family members in those same cells were unaffected by LIN28 expression. So the next question was, what is the mechanism by which LIN28 functions to repress the expression of LET7? And again, we used a biochemical approach. So we derived embryonic stem cells with an epitope-tagged version of LIN28. So we had a flag-tagged LIN28 transgene. We grew multiple 1 billion, approximately, of these cells, prepared whole cell extracts, and then performed flag affinity purifications to look for proteins that specifically associate or binding partners that work together with LIN28. This led us to the discovery of this previously completely uncharacterized predicted enzyme. The name of the gene is ZCCHC11, which is a predicted 3' terminal uridyl transferase, or TUTase for short. And this, in general, is a much underappreciated and understudied family of enzymes. But of course, as its name suggests, it might add uridines to the end of RNAs. So we established an in vitro system where we looked at this very property. So we had synthetic precursor LET7, which we incubated with UTP, radio-labeled UTP, in the presence or absence of LIN28 and the presence or absence of the TUTase. And as you can see here, and if we had activity, you would detect this by the addition of the radio-labeled UTP. As you can see here, when you incubate this synthetic LET7 precursor with the TUTase, you can see some activity. But this activity is greatly enhanced by the addition of the two proteins together, suggesting that LIN28 binds selectively to LET7, recruits the activity of this TUTase. We could show that this was UTP-specific because we could compete the activity using non-labeled competitor UTP, but not with other nucleotide competitors. So what's the significance of this? Well, so we showed that similarly, when you deplete embryonic stem cells of LIN28, you see an accumulation of LET7 members. And this is multiple LET7 members, but again, it seems to be a selective inhibition. Only LET7 microRNAs are affected by LIN28. The same is also true when you deplete this novel TUTase called ZCCHC11. You see accumulation of multiple LET7 family members, but again, it's only LET7 that seems to respond to levels of the TUTase. So we can come up with a model then whereby in embryonic cells you have the normal processing of LET7 is diverted away from processing to the mature form by DICER, and that's achieved by LIN28 selectively binding, and I haven't had time to show, but we know how this is achieved at the molecular level. LIN28 seems to recognize sequences in the terminal loop of precursor LET7 family members. And what that does then is it recruits the activity of a TUTase, the ZCCHC11, which add uridines to the precursor LET7, which presumably leads to the rapid decay of these targeted RNAs. You might like to think of this as an analogous system to the polyubiquitination in the protein world, whereby polyubiquitination would lead to the rapid decay of those targeted proteins. This may be the RNA equivalent, where targeted RNAs get oligouridylated, which then somehow leads to the rapid decay, and we're actively pursuing this downstream mechanism. So I hope I've still got a little time to talk about some unpublished work, where we've identified another novel stem cell microRNA gene regulatory pathway. So this is work from a postdoc in the lab, Harming Chan, who basically asked the question, might there be additional stem cell-specific pathways? So we'd identified, and so for this part of the talk, you need to remember that the business end of the microRNA, so this is the mature microRNA, which is incorporated into the RNA-induced silencing complex. The central component of that complex is a protein called agonaut. And an agonaut specifically binds to these small RNAs to repress target gene expression. So we'd identified a heterochronic gene, LIN28, that turned out to be important in stem cells. So we asked the question, could there be other heterochronic genes that are genetically identified in C. elegans which might be relevant in the mammalian stem cell biology? So one of the genes we focused on was this called LIN41, which belongs to this family of TRIM NHL protein family members. There's not too much known about these, except that other family members have been implicated in various organisms in different aspects of stem cell biology. But as you can see here, for example, BRAT, this MyP26, they seem to inhibit the proliferation of stem cells, and they seem to promote the differentiation. Similarly, the one mammalian example, TRIM32, prevents the self-renewal and promotes differentiation of neural progenitor cells. So we asked the question, what about LIN41, or the mouse version of LIN41? And as you can see here, it turns out to be absolutely stem cell specific in its expression pattern, shown by qPCR here, RT-PCR, in embryonic carcinoma cells and embryonic stem cells, and confirmed by Western blot. And furthermore, its expression seems to be developmentally regulated. So as cells differentiate, you see that TRIM71 expression is downregulated. So then, again, in the interest of time, I haven't shown it, but we used a biochemical approach to find out what proteins might associate with mouse LIN41, which is TRIM71. What we found was the agonaut protein specifically interacts with TRIM71. So how might TRIM71 impact the microRNA pathway? So one of the possibilities which we ruled out was it could affect the biogenesis or stability of the mature microRNA. Another possibility is it may affect what's termed RNA interference or the ability of agonaut to specifically cleave complementary target messenger RNAs. This is also not the case. So perhaps TRIM71 may be somehow influencing the repression of microRNA target genes. And so we performed microarray profiling of embryonic cells depleted of TRIM71, and what we noticed was there were numerous genes, hundreds of genes, which respond to TRIM71 depletion. What was interesting was that this gene set was statistically enriched in cell cycle regulators and also predicted MIR-302 targets. So this confirmed here, we decided to focus on this one particular cell cycle regulator called P21, which normally acts to repress the G1S transition. And as you can see, when you knock down TRIM71, you see an accumulation of P21 expression. And this was actually a known MIR-302 target gene. We confirmed that by you can antagonize MIR-302, and you see a derepression of the P21. And similarly, if you knock down TRIM71, you also see the derepression. And if you do antagonize 302 and deplete TRIM71, you see a further derepression of this 302 target gene. We could show that this was direct using luciferase reporter assays, where we took a portion of the 3' UTR of the P21 and coupled it to luciferase and showed that this, again, behaved appropriately. It was responsive to 302 levels and responsive to TRIM71 levels. So as I mentioned, embryonic stem cells have a very rapid proliferation, and it's thought that this is achieved through bypassing the normal G1S transition. And so what we demonstrated here was when we knock down TRIM71 with siRNAs, embryonic stem cells proliferate much more slowly than the wild-type counterparts. Interestingly, this slowed proliferation could be rescued by also depleting cells of P21, thereby identifying P21 as an essential and key downstream target of the microRNA pathway. So to summarize the TRIM71 part, we've identified a novel stem cell-specific factor, which is a component of an agonaut-containing ribonuclear protein complex in embryonic stem cells. It's required for the efficient repression of microRNA target genes, and it seems to modulate the expression of key cell cycle regulators, one of which being P21, and is essential for the normal rapid proliferation of embryonic stem cells. So I'm just going to finish then with a summary where we actually looked at the relationship between LIN28 and TRIM71, two heterochronic genes identified in worms decades ago. So indeed, as you could see, we could deplete cells of LIN28, as demonstrated here, using siRNAs. Or we could deplete cells of TRIM71 using siRNAs to deplete TRIM71. What was interesting was when we knocked down LIN28, we also see dramatic downregulation of TRIM71. And it's known that TRIM71 is actually a LET7 target gene. So we've identified LIN28, which recruits a novel tutase, to inhibit the processing of LET7 microRNAs. This is important because LET7 would normally repress TRIM71, and it also would normally repress LIN28. And you need TRIM71 to function together with the argonaut and together with the stem cell-specific microRNAs to repress this regulator of the cell cycle to enable a rapid cell cycle progression and the rapid proliferation of embryonic stem cells. This is also interesting, the fact that you can slow down this embryonic stem cell proliferation without necessarily causing differentiation. So if you look at the levels of OCT4 and other pluripotency markers, they don't seem to be affected by LIN28 or TRIM71 depletion. Obviously, this pathway seems to be central not only to maintaining normal embryonic stem cells, but perhaps also to establishing the pluripotent state. We heard earlier from Christian that LIN28 was a known reprogramming factor and was used by Jamie Thompson to facilitate the de-differentiation from fibroblasts to induce pluripotent stem cells. And it's likely that one of the ways in which this operates is by maintaining low levels of LET7, which would enable TRIM71 expression to repress P21. Similarly, it's recently been demonstrated that if you knock down P53 or P21, you can also facilitate the reprogramming process. So obviously, one of the things we're very much interested in now is looking at the role of TRIM71 in cell reprogramming. And also, I should mention that LIN28 has been shown by George Daly's lab and others to be a novel oncogene. So in about 15% of all cancers, LIN28 or LIN28B are upregulated and can transform cells. So what about TRIM71? This potentially could be an unidentified oncogene. And it's interesting that all of the arrays that people have normally been using, there are no probes present for this gene. So its expression pattern has not been characterized. And so obviously we're very interested in looking at whether TRIM71 itself may be an oncogene. And so that I mentioned along the way the people that did the work. And the identification of LIN28 was a collaboration with George Daly, also at Children's Hospital. And in particular, the grad student and the two postdocs that did the majority of the work that I spoke about today. Thank you very much for your attention. And if we have time for a question...